Being passed out for tonight's lesson, and ask you if you be sure you get a copy of it. Follow along if you want to. If you don't, you'll have it when you later to go back and look at the things that we talk about this evening. And give just a second here and let them get the papers scattered before we get underway. I believe we have plenty this evening. Last Sunday morning, I think we ran short, but I think we have plenty. You do understand if we run short, that's Elaine's fault. If we have plenty, that's my doing. Certainly, as we've looked at these lessons, there are things that touch all of us. I believe that there are sufficient things in the lesson for our individuals that are single that will never marry, because we talk so much about the things that fulfill our responsibilities as individuals. And those things are true whether we are inside a marriage or outside of a marriage as a single individual. So as we understand and as we look at these lessons, it will help us to grow both on an individual aspect and in the aspect of marriage itself. Now, we need to remember that in Christian living, we have to apply the principles of Jesus Christ. And when we look at the fact of marriage is a part of our Christian living. So as a part of marriage, we should be applying the principles of Jesus Christ inside that marriage. And if our marriages are to be what God wants them to be, we will be living as a Christian inside the marriage. Interestingly, sometimes we do things inside the marriage and inside the family that we would not do outside of the marriage or outside of the family in simple keeping of these principles. And what we need to recognize is God is concerned about what goes on in the walls of our homes and in the lives of our marriages, as He is in every aspect of our lives. We do not shut God out when we shut the door of the house or when we become in the private situation inside the marriage. I'd like for you to look with me first of all this evening over in Luke, the 6th chapter, verse 31. And here is Jesus is talking. He first of all gives us a verse that we know very well. And as we look at this, it said, "As ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise." And certainly we've looked at that many times, and we know that to be the golden rule, as it's so often called. But what he is telling us, that we have the responsibility as Christian people, as followers of God, to treat other people properly. Now, it's interesting if we follow down from that text that Jesus doesn't just stop with that basic thought. He says, "For if you love them which love you, what think have ye? For sinners also love those that love them." Jesus says the application of this principle goes beyond loving those who love back. Now, inside the marriage, it must be very true that we apply this principle and that we apply it beyond the aspect of love. Sometimes I'll find individuals inside the marriage, husband and wife, and they're fighting at one another because one will say, "Well, they don't love me anymore, so I did this to them." Well, here again, you see the principles of Christ coming into play in the marriage just like it does in life. As you do right to that other individual as you would want them to do to you. And in the second verse he says, it doesn't matter if they don't love you, love them anyway. Go beyond what others do. Then 33, next verse. If you do good to them which do good to you, what thank have ye? For sinners do even the same. And so he takes it up another step. He says, don't just do good if somebody's done good to you. You know, inside a marriage, sometimes I'll hear a husband say, "Well, she did this to me, so I did this back to her." Well, no, he says, don't just do good to them that do good to you. He says, the sinners do that. And if our homes are going to be above what the sinners are, we have to respond not in like to what we receive. Now, it's natural if someone loves you and shows love for you, it's more natural to show love back to that individual. But Christ to a level higher than that. He calls us to the level of showing back not hatred for hatred, but love for hatred, or love for the aspect of spite itself. Verse 34. And if ye tend to them whom ye hope to receive, what thank have ye? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. So here he says, if you lend to those that you expect to receive back from, say, well, the sinners do that. But in the marriage, be willing to give even if you don't expect to receive back. See how that brings us to a different level? And yet so many times in marriages, problems occur because one will say, well, this happened, but I responded to it this. No, he says you respond back in a good way, in a positive way, regardless of what you have received. You know, it's very difficult to stay angry at someone who treats you with love. It's very difficult to develop hatred for someone who continues to show you compassion at every step of the way. And so inside the marriage, what he is calling us to do is to grow to this higher level. Notice verse 35. But if you love your enemies and do good and lend, hoping for nothing again, and your reward shall be great, and you shall be the children of the highest, for he that is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. So he says, so what is it is the case if you do, if you're treated in an unloving way, you treat that with love? He said, that's going to make you where you are the children of God. That's going to bring you to be the children of the Great One, and your reward will be great when that you'll receive from that. In our marriages, if we'll respond in keeping with this verse 31, the reward will be great, and we will be surprised at the changes that will take place. But almost invariably, it's easy for us to respond, and respond so negatively sometimes simply because we have received some type of negative response to start with. We need to change. We need to change the way we act, and we need to change the way that we speak. Now, when we look at the aspect of marriage and feeling unloved in a marriage, when one feels unloved, he's tempted to discontinue showing that love to the mate. And when the love leaves the marriage because of the way that we treat each other, then that marriage itself is going to fall upon very, very hard times. And sometimes in marriage, what we have what comes to be a circle. Anger and hate gets involved in this circle, and it gets to be a very vicious circle. In other words, we let anger and hate get in, and that anger and hate then causes our behavior. Often the things that happen to will affect our behavior, and it's a stepping pattern. But instead of letting the things that go wrong develop anger and hate in us, if we keep being truthful and promise and going toward what God wants us to do, doing good for the evil that's put there, responding back in love instead of letting a hateful or harsh response turn us, then we change the behavior, and we change the behavior for the positive. You know, there is a thing that's called acting out. And we all act out. Sometimes we don't realize why we act out. Acting out is the behavior that we demonstrate from the things that we feel inside our lives. And specifically in the section we're talking about here, the things we feel emotionally. Well, what we have to do, if our behavior is not what it should be, then we've got to change what emotionally. Because that emotion, what we contain inside the heart, sooner or later, it's going to be something that we act out. The old French philosopher put it this way. He says, you walk along with a bucket of sand and someone bumps into you, what spills out is sand. He says, you walk along with a bucket of water and somebody bumps into you, what spills out is water. Well, what spills out of our hearts is what we've got in our hearts. That's the acting out in the behavior of our lives. Now, inside a marriage, if you find yourself having conflict with one another, then that tells you you need to reach deep down and look at changing some things. Because that conflict is the overflow of the heart. It's what comes out of the heart. Sometimes this vicious circle gets in place and we find unhappiness in the life because, you know, we find the mate has acted to us in such a way, and because they act in such a way, we start justifying. Now, sometimes when they act to us in such a way, we start justifying our actions which are wrong. Now, there's never a justification for sin. We attempt it all the time. All the time we try to explain away. Well, I did this, I knew it was wrong, but here's why I did it. Well, there's no justification for sin. And inside the marriage, when these types of things start happening and it brings all this unhappiness and strife inside the marriage, there's no justification for the sin. What we need to do, instead of trying to justify the sin, we need to dig down into where the problem is and help the problem get straightened out so the behavior doesn't have to be justified. The behavior is what God wants it to be. Now, when we get down to the point that there is destruction in the marriage, where there's conflict in the marriage that has brought it to the point that the marriage seems to not want to hold together, usually there's two parties involved in that. Now, for several years of preaching, I've sat and listened to the husband explain what's wrong with the marriage, and then I've gone in and I've sat and listened to the wife explain what's wrong with the marriage. You know, to my understanding to this date, I have never had a husband and a wife that agreed exactly what was wrong with the marriage when it reached that point. The majority of the time, when you're talking to the husband, it's what everything that's wrong with the wife, and when you're talking to the wife describes everything that's wrong with the husband. So this tells us that we have a deep-seated problem. And part of the problem is not taking responsibility of oneself for what is wrong with the marriage. Each one of us have responsibilities to be met inside the marriage, and we must meet our responsibilities if the marriage is to be what God wants it to be. Now, in this continuing study of marriage, we need to recognize that only when we get these things together will the marriage be cemented with the love that God wants it to be. We've talked about two or three emotional needs so far. Those are necessary. The two that we've talked about absolutely must be in place. But what we've got yet to talk about also are important. In other words, as we continue our discussion of these emotional aspects of marriage, all of them have to be in place for the marriage to have the love and the permanency that we want it to have. Now, let's remember this. We do not want marriages that just last. We want marriages that are what God wants them to be. Now, I can go home and I can satisfy myself, well, my mate understands the Bible and she understands that we can't get out of this marriage and be right with God, so this marriage is going to last regardless of what's in it. And a lot of, quote, Christian people wind up in marriages with that attitude. But that doesn't please God. And it doesn't give us the joy in our marriages that God intends for us to have in our marriages. You see, we want to have a marriage that's better than the average marriage of the world. A Christian should have a marriage that excels the marriages of the world. A Christian should have a marriage that, Galatians the 5th chapter, brings in the things that are the fruit of the Spirit, because we have those spiritual things in our lives, in our hearts, we ought to find a joy, a peace, and a love, and the other things mentioned there that goes beyond what the world finds in marriage. Okay, so this evening we're going to look at one aspect, one emotional need, and that's the woman's need for conversation. And this generally is an emotional need that belongs to the woman. There are times that men also need conversation, but men are not the conversationalists that women are. And as we look at this need and describe it as being her need, there needs to be conversation in the inside of the marriage. This means that husband and wives need to talk to each other. In other words, to talk to each other, we need to spend time that specifically is set aside for conversation. Now, this conversation that the husband and wife has that we're talking about has to go beyond the business conversation of marriage. Now, let me very quickly describe the business conversation. Do we have enough money to make this week? Do we have enough money to get by this month? Does this need to be fixed in the house, or does that need to be fixed in the house? That's the operational part of marriage. The conversation that we're talking about is conversation that goes beyond what has to be there to operate. You will agree that there has to be conversation that takes a place between the husband and wife for just simply the normal operation of the marriage itself. But her need for conversation, it goes beyond that, and he needs to recognize that that need for conversation is part of her need. And so, recognizing that, let's first of all look at women. Women express themselves verbally. Matter of fact, some women are excellent at expressing themselves verbally. And as we look at the things that women talk about, they like to talk about their feelings. They like to talk about themselves. They like to talk about everyday events. They like to talk about the people that they encounter in life. And they like to talk about babies and families. Now, if you'll think about women, these are the things that they talk about. And a woman will spend a lot more time talking about how she feels about things than men will. Men, they do not stand around and talk about how they feel about other people or each other and things of that nature. Women will do that. Women will talk about themselves. They'll describe what's going on in their life. They'll tell about what they're thinking. Men generally do not talk about things like that. Women will talk about, a woman will come in and she'll give you a complete rundown of everything that has happened to her that day. All the people that she's encountered and talked to, the problems that has occurred. And if you get a woman started on her babies, you'll never get her to quit showing you her pictures. And especially grandmothers about their grandchildren. So women talk about a lot of things, and these are the things that they talk about. Now let's turn to men. Men talk about things which are, well, from a man's standpoint, considered to be more practical. Men talk about things like work, ball games, hunting and fishing, automobiles, the projects that they're doing. So if you bring a man and a man's going to talk, what little he talks, he doesn't talk about the things that the woman talks about. He talks about the things that would be natural for him to talk about. Now, you've got to remember that the man's conversation is generally more reserved than the woman's is. But you've also got to remember this, that the man's conversation's entirely on a different set of subjects than the woman's is. Now, what happens to us in marriage, we bring the woman, the wife, in with this set of conversation and ready to talk. We bring the man in with a whole set, different set of things to talk about and a reserved attitude toward talking. He's just not as openly expressive as the woman is. So here you have the woman. She is a conversive individual, and she needs conversation inside that marriage thing. Conversation inside that marriage tells her how much she's loved. He hears me. He thinks about what I've said. He responds to me. Now, fellas, if she doesn't get that, she's not getting something that she desperately needs in that marriage. Now, remember this, and ladies, remember this. For a man to get involved in that conversation to the degree that we're talking about, he has to learn to do that. Now, what happens is sometimes some men never learn this little process of being involved in the conversation that needs to take place in the home. But it is a learned response. And they sit back and say, oh, I don't want to learn that. Hey, the Bible tells us to learn to love. And being conversant to that woman, to let her know that she's loved, is part of learning to love and part of learning to show that love. So it is something that we can do. Now, we need to remember, and we go back to Genesis 2, verse 24, that having this relationship and being one is more than just about having sex. It means to come to share material possessions. It means to come to share thoughts, to share feelings, to share success, to share our failures also. And the only way we can share these things is if we talk about them. And so this conversation has to take place in the marriage. Otherwise, I don't know her thoughts. Otherwise, I won't learn her feelings. And neither will she mine. The conversation is necessary to go both ways on this. So as we learn to talk, we learn to share things. And the more we learn to share these things, the more conversant we become. Now, I have pictured for you spheres of interest. Now, I want to thank Elaine. Elaine's worked hard on this. But I have two spheres of interest here. Okay? I'm going to step over here to the side. I have one sphere of interest, blue, represents husbands, or men. Let's start out with men. I have another sphere of interest here that represents a woman. Let me start way back for you fellas that have been married for a lot of years, okay? Let's go way back to the dating time. And here is a woman with her sphere of interest, and here over here on the other side is a man with his sphere of interest. Now, they see each other out here, and they're each in their own sphere. Dating's happened yet, by the way. As long as they're each in their own sphere, there's no dating can happen. No way, no, not possible. Now, she might be sitting over here and say, I wonder if he'd date me. And he might be sitting over here saying, well, you know, she's pretty good looking. I wonder what it'd be like to date her. Now, until there is contact, there will be no date. But after a while, there might be contact. Some way or another, the two come and contact each other. Now, at the point of contact, there can be dating. It might be the fact that all it takes is a contact. I once knew a man and wife that he came back from World War II. They crossed each other's paths on a Friday night. They got married on the following Saturday. Oh, don't laugh. I knew them 53 years later when they were still married. Matter of fact, preached her funeral. You know, something happened after the contact and had to. Now, this is called, you know, just a contact here. An intersect, it's called in math. But sometimes this happens. Now, when this happens, it's called a union in mathematical aspects. But I want to talk to it about a union in the aspect of interest. Because in the dating process, the couple begins to find out that they have interests that are the same. Now, I hope you can see the difference. The interests that are the same are the interests where there are both blue lines and red lines. And as the couple dates and there's interests the same, the more interests the same, the more they get interested in eventually marrying one another. Now, what happens is after a while, they marry each other. Now, the interests that are the same will continue to increase inside the marriage. But sometimes after the marriage occurs, well, we're going to talk about this some next week too. There's just some things that happen after the marriage occurs. Sometimes she's no longer interested in the activities that he's interested in because she was only interested in those activities to get to know him and to be with him. And once they're married, she already thinks she knows him and she's already with him all the time, so the interest sometimes becomes less. And sometimes after the marriage, he gets the finding and gets this attitude. He wants a little more time alone, and his time alone comes out of that. And sometimes they wake up and say, well, we don't love each other anymore because we don't have anything the same. We don't have any interest in one another. That's sad. Now, the challenge is for us not just to have contact in marriage, but for us to develop interests that are mutual interests, that gives us that overlap that brings us joy in marriage because we have things to talk about, things to do, we have activities alike, and because they're alike, we're involved with each other more. And let me introduce this to you, too. Suppose that our physical things that we like give us this much interest. You know what happens when you put God in the picture together and prayer in the picture together and a study of the Bible in the picture together? You want to know why people that pray together, worship together, stay together? It's because they're cemented together in that union of life. And so that union of life is something that we have to be concerned in. And when we as husband and wife see that it begins to become less, we need to take new activities and take action to bring that, to bring it back to where it ties us together so that we'll have those mutual interests in life to be able to follow through with the things that we need to have. Now, inside of this, to bring these mutual interests together, there has to be communication. The key to mutual interest is communication. You see, we can not ever bring these points of interest where they overlap unless we're willing to work with it. Now, I want to turn to the Bible, and the Bible does talk somewhat about communication inside the marriage relationship, husband-wife relationship. Don't write it now on these first two. A continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. That is a verse about communication inside of marriage. Next one, Proverbs 21, verse 9. It is better to dwell in the corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman inside a white house. Now, a lot of times when we think about the Bible talking about communication in marriage, we think about such verses as these. In actuality, what we find in these verses, it talks about a breakdown of communication in the marriage. What he is describing in these verses is a woman that is having to do a lot of shouting and yelling because either she doesn't have anyone listening at all, or she has failed in the communication process to properly communicate that which she feels, and he hearing it doesn't understand. But it's a two-way street that's being described here. And we need to recognize that that can't be that way. We have to have the proper communication. Song of Solomon 2, verses 10 through 13. I love this verse. Didn't know it was in the Bible until I worked on these lessons. Matter of fact is, I got interested in the Bible's talking about communication between husband and wife, and I thought to myself, if it's found anywhere in the Bible, it'll be found in Song of Solomon. Friends, I read the whole book to find 3-4 verses here. But listen to the quality of this. My beloved spake and said unto me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is gone. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of the singing of the birds is come. The voice of the turtle is heard in our land. The fig tree putteth forth her green figs, and the vines with tender grape give a good smell. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. Now, Solomon does exactly what the woman wants. He communicates with her. Look at what he communicates. He communicates the fact that now that the weather has improved, he wants her to come and go away with him. He shows an interest in her. He shows an interest in wanting to be with her. He shows an interest in wanting her to come and be part of his life in doing the things that he's about to go do. And so here he has demonstrated a very great communication. But watch the next verse. Oh, my dove. Now, you might have pet names inside your marriage. If you do, that's good. It's fine. It's okay. We won't make you tell us what they are. But that's what he does here. He refers to her as his dove. Oh, my dove, thou art in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the stairs. Let me see thy countenance. He wants to look at her. Let me hear thy voice. Listen to him. For sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely. Now, what he has done here, he's turned and he's looked at her and said, yes, I want to be with you. And part of the reason I want to be with you is I want to hear you talk to me. Your voice is sweet, and I want to hear it. Oh, the sweetness of good communication, conversation, talking inside the marriage. So what we're talking about this evening very much is a biblical aspect. Now, let's go back to dating again. You remember in the dating process, usually in dating, the couple plans time to be together. Have you ever noticed that? Do you ever see them in dating not have time to be with one another? It's amazing how much time dating can find. Anyway, they want to be together because they want to get to know each other more. They want to know each other, to know how much they care for them. They want to just have enjoy at the time of being together. Have you ever noticed in dating the conversation that definitely takes place? They talk. Phone calls. Have you ever noticed, did you ever use the telephone in dating? Maybe in our lifetime, not today, but in our time of dating, we'd go sit on the swing together sometimes, or maybe just take a walk in the woods. I know you don't do those things today. That's all right. But I've got to talk to these old people too. But anyway, in dating, we did all of these things. The phone calls, the being in the swing together, the taking a walk together, was saying, I want to talk with you because I want to know you and I want to be with you. That's, and those things just naturally took place in the dating process. Today we have also cell phones, texting. Oh, do any young people ever text? Email, instant messaging, Facebook, and, on goes the list. Now, all of these things are saying we want to know about each other. We want to talk to each other. We want to know what each other's doing. And in the dating process, these things go on as they went on in our, the older ones' lives when we were dating. Now, as these things went on in the dating process, there was good conversation. Now, marriage counselors that deal with marriage problems tell us that a husband and wife need 15 hours a week of undivided conversation. Husbands, that means it's your responsibility to get 15 hours a week to talk to your wife with just the two of you. I see a lot of men squirming around right now. So I'm going to talk about what the men are thinking about this time. See, I'm a man too. And you've just been told that you've got to spend 15 hours undivided time. That means the kids aren't with you. That means the telephone's not ringing. That means the television's not going. I've got to spend 15 hours undivided time with my wife every week. Somebody's sitting there, and as they think about it, said, Preacher, did I hear you right? Yeah, you heard right. This is something that we need in our marriages and we need in our homes. Somebody else is sitting there saying, well, I'd have to put two more days in the week to get those 15 hours out for her. Someone's sitting there saying, well, what do you expect us to do, preacher, have 30 hours in the day? And then someone's always sitting there saying, well, what would we talk about if we had 15 talk? Well, sadly, this is a commentary on where we've gotten to in our marriages. It's like the wife saying to the husband, said, I need to talk. And the husband says, what about this time? That's a place where we've gotten to. And yet, when we look at this, let's go back again now. When you were dating your wife, did you find 15 hours a week to talk to her? I'm going to ask for a show of hands. Maybe I should. When you were dating, did you find that 15 hours? Friends, I can tell you, I found more than that. I talked to somebody earlier tonight, and he said, I found every minute I could. Well, what happened if we... Let's just picture that 15. Do you remember anyone saying, well, they're always together? Young people, does anybody ever do that? Say, well, they're all together? Do you remember anyone ever say, the girl's parents, possibly, asking questions like, is he coming again? I had a daughter. Are the parents saying, does he know where home is? You ever get that feeling? You know why all this is occurring? And they say, can you get off the telephone? Don't you know that there's work that needs to be done? Now, all of these things went on, and these things went on inside the dating process. I can even remember parents saying, well, you need to cool off for a while. I said, cool off from what? All I'm doing is talking to her. Now, think about it. Conversation is a key to relationship. Now, what you were doing in dating is you were taking the time in conversation, the time to build relationships. Do you ever remember parents being worried about how much time you were spending together? And sometimes they had the worry that you were spending too much time with each other? And you'd make the argument, say, well, Mom and Dad, we're not doing anything but just talking to one another. Now, you know why that concern? My friend, conversation is the key to not only relationships, but is the key to furthering relationships. Now, the dating couple in their conversation and they're talking about the things they're doing and they're going to do and all of that, it brought them closer together. In actuality, that conversation brought their interest to cross, like we were talking about a minute ago. And the more they talked, the more those interests came to be compatible with one another. Now, as that took place inside the dating process and they spending the time doing all this talking, sometimes the parents would get upset. And the reason they got upset, they knew where that talking was going. After all, young people, don't doubt it for a minute. Your parents were there. They did all that talking one time, and look where it got them. It got them married. And so it is a concern when we see young people spending a great deal of time with one another and doing all this talking and all this conversation together. It's going somewhere. And the more that it occurs, the more rapidly it goes somewhere. But this that we practiced in dating needs to be practiced in marriage. We must put the conversation back into the marriage because it's that undivided time together in conversation, look at the statement, that develop intimacy. We cannot be intimate with an individual that we do not talk to and know the thoughts, the feelings of the heart and their lives. Now, sometimes married couples come up and say, well, we just don't love each other anymore. You know why? Mostly because they don't know each other anymore. Multitudes of married couples I've talked to and find out that their interests have gone astray from one another. The time that they spend with one another talking just does not add up to what it should be. And by the way, and I'm running close on time, but parents, still be concerned about those young people and the time they spend together talking. Note that there is a danger from continual talking even inside the dating relationship. They need to talk. They need to recognize each other. They need to learn about each other. But you need to remember, if they're spending a lot of time together just talking, that sometimes you need to slow it down and give it a little more time. It's a very good recommendation that in dating, young people date in group dating. Date where they're with other Christian people, because that gives it more time for this process to take place before one rushes to a result of marriage when maybe they really don't know each other as well as they should yet. Give it time. Let the process take its course. Okay, so again, when we look back into the marriage, we need the joy of having conversation marriage. You know, good conversation is going to increase the affection, going to increase the way that we feel about each other, and that's going to bring us to the sexual fulfillment. Very quickly now, look at the picture. Because here we've taken the husband and wife, and we've separated them. There are things that deter good conversation inside the marriage. First of all, a lot of technical equipment has a tendency to do away with our conversation. Things we talked about this morning in the aspect. Sometimes reading can do away with the conversation. Sometimes being involved in material things. Sometimes careers get involved in stopping the conversation. Notice Harley says, a career should serve the marriage and not the other way around. Friends, we're in a career to enhance our marriages. We're not in a marriage to enhance our career. Keep the career where it belongs. Also, sometimes children get in the way. Sometimes we just give too much time to separate hobbies and friends, and these things get in the way of conversation. But also sometimes to go against conversation, there's the negative responses. And the first one's the one-syllable response. This is where the wife is trying to talk to the husband, and she asks the husband a question. He says, yeah. And so she goes ahead talking to the husband. He says, oh. He didn't even hear what went on. He's just responding, you know. After all, if he gives some response, she pretends that he's still listening, whether he's listening or not, and he can get by with these one-syllable grunt responses until he's asked a question that and she confronts him with it. Did you really hear what I was saying? And so we need to be careful about that type of response. We need to be careful about the silence response. Sometimes the woman tries to speak or the man tries to speak to the wife, vice versa, try to talk to each other, and nothing. No silent treatment. Won't say a word. Something's wrong when that happens. And the only way out of it is conversation. Do you realize that? No other way out of it. And the longer the individual sits and gives the silent treatment to the other, the more difficult it becomes to have the conversation. And so the more difficult it is to resolve it. The practice should be, instead of having the silent treatment, is to immediately start talking about that which is wrong. And then watch about ignoring the other one that's talking. You need to watch also about the reason for that. You know, sometimes we ignore the wife because we want her just to run down and cease talking. And we give her time and, you know, we don't say anything, we won't answer, we just let her talk. Sometimes it's the fact that this is done because we don't agree and we don't want to say anything. No, don't ignore her conversation. Instead of ignoring it, we need to listen to it. We need to talk it through. And then watch about other negative responses. And I'm going to talk to women. Watch about rolling your eyes back in the back of your head and walking out of the room. You know, sometimes women, when they do not get the conversation that they want, they react negatively to it in these ways also. Roll your eyes, huff out of the room, act like you've been greatly mistreated. And all of that has done is put the strain between the husband and wife to be greater than ever. We must talk through these things. Very quickly, some activities which will help you. Go back to dating. Yeah, go back and do the things you did when you were dating. Somehow, some way, we got to marriage and we come to the conclusion that all that was over with and we don't need to do any more. Well, you need to go back to doing what you were doing. My suggestion, very firmly, pray and read the Bible together. Discuss spiritual things. Talk about sermons and Bible classes, the work of the local congregation, one's own spiritual condition and needs, the plans and activities that they can complete together as husband and wife for Jesus Christ. We as Christian people don't talk enough about our Christian living inside of our marriages. Put it back in. Talk to each other while you're driving along. Eat your meals together. You know, this is something that's almost gone out of our society. As husband and wife, eat your meals together with the telephone turned off, the television turned off, the computer turned off, and each other turned on to listening to the communication. Let me challenge you. If as husband and wife, you're not eating at least a meal together a day, just for 5 days this next week, go back and eat one meal a day together. With all these other things turned off. And see what happens. Take a walk together down the street, the park, or the woods. Play simple games together. Do things together that you can talk. All right. Back to our survey here. Husbands, scale of 1 to 10. 10 being the most satisfied. How satisfied are you with your undivided conversation with your wife? How well do you think you're doing? Rate yourself. Wives, scale 1 to 10. How satisfied are you with the undivided conversation with your husband? Once you've rated, go home, sit down across the table from one another, and turn the pages over and show each other what you rated each other. Don't be agitated if there's a difference. Just come to the conclusion that your ignorance has been enlightened, and now you need to go to work on resolving the difference. You know, you say, well, what are we going to talk about? Well, it's going to take some time to get there. Do you know surveys have shown that people like policemen or firemen that work maybe two nights, they work and then they're back home and then they're off two nights, that it takes that husband and wife 2 days to get over him being gone just two nights? And that it takes 2 days for the conversation to return to normal in the normal process of what it should be, just been gone 2 days and two nights. Well, can you imagine how difficult it's going to be if we've gotten into the point that we do not have conversation like it should be and we haven't had for 5 or 6 or 10 or 15 years and now we're going to try to get it back where it needs to be? It's not going to occur easy and it's going to take some work and we've got to be able to go through the hardships to get it back to where it needs to be. Number one, have a specific time to spend time together. Don't leave it up to chance. At 7:30 on Monday night, it's our time. It's not the TV's time. It's not the children's time. It's our time. We're going to spend some time together and turn off all of those disturbances. Prior to the practice time, remember, if you haven't been talking, you're going to get in there and say, well, what are we going to talk about? Prior to the practice time of conversation, make notes on what you're going to talk about. You're saying, preacher, are you actually seriously saying for us to sit down and write out a list of things that we're going to talk to? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm actually saying, sit down, write out a list of things you're going to talk together about. He brings his list in, she brings her list in, and if you want to be fair and equal about it, start with her, and she talks about her first thing on her list, and then you talk about the first thing on your list, and you won't do this off very much, and you know what? The conversation will be natural and flow on its own. Do things together that you can talk about. We'll talk more about that next week. Don't use this time to criticize. Don't use this time interrupting one another. Listen to each other's opinions and listen closely. And above all else, don't use this time to drive home every mistake that's ever been made, even if it's a present mistake. Use the time positively. Make it a time where you talk about things that you enjoy talk about. And you're going to grow together to love one another even more. You know, love is very important in the marriage. It won't exist. It won't continue without it. It won't continue to be what it needs to be and what it should be and what it could be and all the things God can give us through it. But we have to work and learning to love in all these ways. This evening, if you're not a child of God, is the fact that you're not ready to go to heaven, you're not ready for the judgment day. My friend, if you're not ready, you can get ready before you leave this building this evening. If you need to come, come as we stand and as we sing.